It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Last night, voters in Iowa had one final look at the Republican presidential candidates as they debated in Sioux City. The event was considered make or break for some of them, like Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, and Rick Santorum, who were low in the polls and running out of time. The Iowa caucuses are right after the holidays on January 3rd. So all the candidates made an effort to stand out last night. Also, toward the end of the debate, social issues like abortion, gay marriage, and so-called liberal activist judges became the focus, concerns that matter a lot to the evangelical base, which drives Iowa's Republican Party, but receive far less attention here in Live Free or Die, New Hampshire. Today in The Exchange, we turn our eyes to Iowa, how the campaign for the caucuses has been unfolding there, and how that compares to the Granite State with our first in the nation primary on January 10th. Let's hear from you. If you're going to vote in the GOP primary, have your preferences switched as the campaign has evolved, or have you stuck with the same candidate over these many months? Have you been following the Iowa race and how the candidates present themselves there versus in the Granite State? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests this hour from Iowa. Jonathan All joins us from Ames. He's news director at Iowa Public Radio. And Jonathan, a big welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Well, thanks for having me on, Laura.
Joining us from Des Moines, Kathy Obradovich, a political columnist at the Des Moines Register. And Kathy, good to have you. Thank you.
Great to be here, Laura. Thanks.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis in studio, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the popular website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, great to see you. Thank you.
Hey, good morning, Laura.
Well, I want to turn to our Iowa guests first. And Kathy, give us a picture of this Iowa campaign, because in some ways it's different from the one here in New Hampshire, both in terms of who's really spending a lot of time in Iowa and what types of issues they're talking about.
Well, Laura, I'd say it's a really blurry picture in Iowa this time. Normally, by this time, we have a pretty good idea of who is going to be the winner of the Iowa caucuses come January 3rd. And as we sit here today, I really have no real strong idea about who's going to win. It's been an odd campaign where candidates have shot up to the top, and we've seen this nationally as well as in Iowa. It stayed there for a very brief time and then started to slide. And I think the question now is, can Newt Gingrich, who is at the head of the pack at the moment, can he deliver? He's got an organization that he is scrambling to put back together, having had to dismantle it over the summer. And you've got a couple of other strong candidates, Ron Paul and Mitt Romney, who are all in contention. Or could there be a surprise from lower in the pack?
Well, and as you talk about the candidates, Kathy, and you mentioned the polls, they're always tricky things. But it's my understanding, Kathy, they're especially tricky in Iowa because a caucus isn't a primary. You have to show up. So it's easy for me to tell a pollster, yeah, I like Newt Gingrich or Ron Paul. But then I actually have to get myself out of the house and to the caucus place at the right time before they close the doors. So polls are trickier in Iowa, aren't they?
Yeah, polls are tricky, and organization does matter. You do have a situation where a campaign could be riding high in the polls, but if they don't have any campaign organization to support that, to get people out, sometimes it doesn't matter that much. If you're drawing mostly from people who are experienced caucus goers and they can get themselves out to their precinct caucuses just fine without your help, then you don't necessarily have to worry that much about organization. But let's say you're a candidate like Ron Paul, for example, who is attracting independents, young people, new faces to the caucus process. You really do have to have some support there to make sure that they understand what they're supposed to do and to get out and also to bring their friends and neighbors along with them.
Well, what about the issues, Jonathan All? What types of issues are you hearing the candidates talk about now in Iowa? And has that changed as the campaign has evolved over the months?
Well, I think it has, and I think that you know the two big ones, obviously the economy and jobs, business is probably still number one among the voters in Iowa, as it is across the nation. Social issues are definitely a topic that some candidates, specifically Bachman, Santorum, to a lesser extent Perry, have been talking about and that voters want to hear about. There's a new one, though, that I sense I'm hearing more voters talk about as the process goes on, and that is this kind of notion of the ability to lead. And I think that might be why you're seeing Gingrich and Romney kind of hanging at the top right now, even though they have among the most absent campaigns here in Iowa, is that there's a perception that among the two of them, that you know Gingrich, his time as Speaker, and Romney as the governor of Massachusetts, that they have this ability to lead that they may not be seeing in the candidates that are pushing on social issues. And then there's the big underlying thing is, you know, where does the remnants of the active Tea Party and their principles play into that? A lot of what they stood for, those people gravitate to Ron Paul. Some of them gravitate to Michelle Bachman. But where does that kind of fall in, especially if their priorities may be ability to lead or jobs or the social issues?
Well, and interesting, Jonathan, in that debate in Sioux City last night, the first question out of the box was not about jobs or the economy or even the social issues that are more important in Iowa, but electability, Jonathan. That was the first round of questioning.
Well, definitely. And I also, though, remember that there have been so many of these debates. Don't underscore the desire of Fox to try to do something different. That yes, it was the first question out of the box, but I don't know how much of that was trying to reflect what Iowans are talking about and how much of it might have been Fox saying, all right, we've already tread all of this ground before. What can we go with that's bigger? Which is, you know, a strategy, and I understand that. But yes, that electability, ability to lead is starting to creep in. I don't think it's higher on anyone's list than social issues or jobs in the economy, but it's definitely something that I don't know people were talking about state fair time or even a couple months ago.
Dean, I'd love your perspective on how the New Hampshire campaigns compared to this Iowa campaign that our other guests are talking about.
Sure. I mean, it's certainly been different. There are some similarities. Obviously, we've all commented on the extent to which this seems to be a more nationalized campaign than we've had in recent years. You know, New Hampshire, for the most part, has been pretty stable. Mitt Romney has been in the lead the entire time. You look on average, he's up about 10 to 15 points. Ron Paul has also been very stable, either in second or third place, polling mid-teens. One of the big differences has been the rise of Newt Gingrich, who now is in second place, somewhere in the low 20s. But, you know, I've said all along for months and months that this is really Romney's primary to lose, and I think that is still the case. I thought Jonathan's comments about leadership and electability were very interesting because the longer I do this, the more convinced I become that, you know, in the end, the vote decision is really not a calculation about issue positions and ideology. It really is this kind of, for most people, a gut-level response to the leadership qualities of the candidates, the electability of the candidates, character. We've heard a lot of discussion recently about, you know, who committed the bigger evil, Newt Gingrich for taking the $1.6 million from Freddie Mac, or Mitt Romney for having to break down some companies in order to make them profitable. So, you know, issues, you know, here in New Hampshire, the economy, obviously, jobs, foreign policy, a lot of talk about Iran. We don't do the social issues in the way that Iowa does. That's kind of a well-known feature of our demographics compared to the caucus demographics. But I do think that it's not surprising to me to see these kinds of arguments about leadership and character and decision-making and electability take center stage at this point. They always do in my mind.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
There's one thing different about social issues this time around, and that is that there are a larger number of people who are trying to hang their hat on that hook. 4 years ago, Mike Huckabee was, you know, that was his thing, and there was really not a serious contender to him on that social issue. But this time around, you've got Bachman, Santorum, and Perry who are all trying to hang their hat on that hook. So I'm wondering if that challenges some of the conventional wisdom that Iowa's Republican voters are so influenced by the evangelicals, when if you get more than one of them in the room, you know, more than one candidate appealing to them in the race, that they're diluted relatively quickly.
I think that's right, Jonathan, actually, that when you have so many social conservatives, in fact, it only works if they're united. They're influential in the caucuses, but they cannot dominate the caucuses unless they are really substantially united around a candidate. And I'm not seeing that happen this time.
Well, that's interesting. So with three social conservatives in the race, that vote gets split, Kathy. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I was talking about sort of overall issue salience in the campaign. And here in New Hampshire, you know, I've watched all of those candidates, Perry, Santorum, Bachman, come into the state and say, you know, here in New Hampshire, we're going to talk about jobs and the economy, literally being very kind of self-conscious about the fact that, you know, in terms of polling data, we're the second least religious company in the state in the country. So I understand the point that they're making about kind of selection among candidates in the caucus. What I was referring to is that kind of the nature of the discourse in New Hampshire is not driven by those issues. Those candidates, a Bachman, a Santorum, Perry, they don't talk a lot about those in this state, and all three of them are polling at around roughly 3% in the state.
Well, and Bachman doesn't even come to New Hampshire. I think she's been here, what, twice?
Right, or? And Perry was here early on with his jobs, and then now he's running that socially religious conservative ad in Iowa and, you know, has basically left the state.
Let me invite our listeners to join us, and then lots more to talk about. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at the Republican presidential nomination race as it's been unfolding in Iowa. Give us a call if you've been following that Iowa race. How do you see the candidates presenting themselves there versus in the Granite State? And overall, have your own preferences switched as the campaign has evolved, or have you stuck with the same candidate over these many months? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Kathy, Dean mentioned that ad, and I would like to just ask you quickly about that. This is Rick Perry suddenly switching from jobs to running a campaign ad that really hits at some socially conservative messages. Remind us what that's all about.
Well, you know, I think that Mitt Romney is trying to really, I think, address a different sort of audience now. You know, he has substantially done, especially in New Hampshire, he's done substantially well at drawing folks that are most interested in jobs, the economy. But I think that he is also, to expand his margin, he needs to appeal to people on some other fronts. And this is an opportunity for him to do that. Also, I get the impression that Mitt Romney is trying to show that he is appealing to people on a one-to-one basis. Ad he has out this morning in New Hampshire, you know, is a kind of a conversation with voters. So I think he's trying to show that.
And Kathy, I got to cut you off there. I do apologize. We will talk more after a short break and start taking your calls, so stay with us.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Holloway Motor Cars of Manchester, authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, featuring the 2012 S550 luxury sedan with fuel-efficient twin-turbo engine and iconic design. BenzCars.com. From Hanover Street Chop House in Manchester, fine dining and inspired cuisine in a salon-like setting, reminiscent of an old-world steakhouse, menu and reservations at HanoverStreetChopHouse.com. And the Altus Investment Group in Concord, one office managing $40 million of retirement nest eggs for baby boomers in central New Hampshire, altusinvest.com. More on Iowa's first in the nation caucus on the Exchange on NHPR, then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. It's a Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather today turning partly sunny and windy most of the state, highs mid to upper 40s, dropping off a bit during the day. Cloudy, windy in the North Country today with high temperatures from mid to upper 30s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the last push of the Republican presidential campaign in Iowa. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We're looking at how candidates are playing in the Hawkeye State, how the campaign has been shaping up there, and how that compares to the campaign this year in New Hampshire. We'd love your thoughts on that, 1-800-892-6477, or email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, before we go to our callers, I did want to ask you about one more thing. And Jonathan All at Iowa Public Radio, I think it was you who mentioned this, that people in Iowa are feeling a little bit disrespected. They're not seeing the candidates as much. They're complaining that this is all taking place on national TV. Give us a little bit more on that. And then I'd like to ask Dean and Kathy about that as well.
Sure. Well, you know, in Iowa, the Iowans definitely like the idea, the whole notion that if you want to be elected president, you have to come out here and go to house parties and coffee shops and talk to a lot of people and look them in the eye and do the retail politics thing. And there's just been a lot less of that this time than in previous caucuses. A lot of it was because Mitt Romney, the front runner nationally for a good amount of time, his strategy was to pretty much ignore Iowa. So that had something to do with it. Then you had these candidates who kind of popped up and down in the polls. And so there's been a lot fewer presidential visits in a lot of ways. Now, it's ramped up a lot in the last week or so and will continue on, but it's not nearly as intense as it has been in the past. And I'm sensing that there's a lot less passion among the voters that have already made up their minds and are trying to be volunteers and get their friends and neighbors to vote for it, with the exception of Ron Paul supporters, who are incredibly passionate and probably among the most loyal. But there isn't that really strong push that there had been in previous caucuses. And I think a lot of it is because people are thinking, well, I can skip Iowa, or Iowa isn't as important, or can I still do well without spending the time and money on it?
Yeah, it's interesting. And boy, we could do a whole hour probably on this, Kathy. But when we talk about the number of visits, kind of partly depends on who you're talking about, right? I mean, Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum have pretty much moved to Iowa, haven't they?
Yeah, Rick Santorum in particular has spent more time in Iowa than anybody else, with 262 events in the state, according to the Register's tracking online. He's had 89 days in the state. Michelle Bachmann, 67 days. But you know, if you add up all of the candidates and all of the days, Jonathan is exactly right. It doesn't even come close to 4 years ago. Probably doesn't come close to 8 years ago. 4 years ago was a little different because the Democrats were had contested caucuses as well, and so Iowa was sort of the center of the universe for both parties, and you had both parties here wanting to compete with the other party's message as well as with each other. You don't have that this time. But, you know, as he said also, Mitt Romney, it wasn't that he necessarily wanted to ignore Iowa, but he has a problem here. He has a problem with expectations. He didn't want to come in as a prohibitive front runner in Iowa and then be upset like he was 4 years ago. So he has had to play a strategy where he wants to win Iowa. He said he wants to win Iowa. I take him at his word that he wants to win. But he has to. He cannot possibly make it look easy. Otherwise, he gets no benefit from winning.
So, Dean, is the mythology over that good old-fashioned, you know, coffee shop, diner, baby-kissing retail politics is done in Iowa and New Hampshire? Is it over with?
I'm not ready to pass judgment on it yet. You and I have talked a number of times about the impact of technology and how it seems to be nationalizing the campaigns. There's no doubt that this particular primary cycle on the Republican side has really been run on television, cable TV, and the internet. These debates, I think this was the 13th debate, and we are seeing less of your typical retail politics. You know, here in New Hampshire, the typical benchmark is the John McCain benchmark. You do over 100 town hall meetings and retail politics events in the state, and you get to know people on the ground. And we just haven't had that from all the candidates. Huntsman makes it regularly known that he's passed that benchmark. Romney, I'm not sure, and Paul has spent a lot of time here as well. Newt Gingrich, I think, is scrambling to set up an organization. You know, to me, it's not surprising that Santorum, Bachmann, and Perry are spending more time in Iowa. I've said all along that they were not going to be a particularly good fit for New Hampshire voters. And that gets back to this whole issue of kind of differences in the types of issues that resonate between the two states. They came here, they gave it a shot, not a particularly receptive audience, and they moved on to Iowa, where I think they probably have a better chance, or probably their best chance of making a mark. So I've heard a lot of disappointment from voters. This seems to be just kind of taking off now and really only a month away from the New Hampshire primary, you know, 20 days or so from Iowa. We'll see if it's permanent or if it's a quirk of this particular set of candidates. I'm just not sure yet.
Well, and one more question on this. Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
I think we'll learn a lot, too, because as it's been alluded to, you know, Rick Santorum has been to all 99 counties and he's going to keep that pace up. Michelle Bachmann starts a bus tour today and she's going to hit all 99 counties in a very short period of time. Rick Perry's been on the bus and is going to be back on the bus. So those three people are really the ones who are embracing this idea that there's still time to do retail politics between now and the caucus. If those three people come in 4, 5, and 6 in the caucus, I think not only does it almost spell the end of their campaigns, I think it also it hits Iowa and delivers a huge blow to the future of the importance of the caucuses if those three people, the three that really push hard and try to do, you know, the stops at the pizza ranches and the Rotary lunches, if those people come in 4, 5, 6 and the people who didn't do that kind of work come in 1, 2, 3, then I think it's a much different discussion.
What do you think, Kathy?
You know what, though, Jonathan? Ron Paul has done retail politics in Iowa, and he's built an on-the-ground campaign. He's been in Iowa, you know, not the most of everybody else, but he's been here quite a bit, as has Newt Gingrich. He's actually – both of those guys have been here more than Rick Perry. I really hesitate to say, okay, we're going to take what a specific candidate does, add up their days in the state, and then have a calculation that this is going to be how it is from now on. I think it really does fit the individual candidates and also this cycle where the debates have been so important. I have a feeling 4 years from now people will look at those, you know, look at the debates and say, okay, we think we had too many 4 years ago. We're going to back off on that.
For some of us, you can't have too many debates, Kathy. Dean, go ahead, jump in.
I think Kathy's point is well taken. Whenever I think about the issue of retail politics, there is a little bit of a mythology that if you simply spend enough time in a state, then you will do well in the primary, the caucus. And that's just not the case. We've had a number of candidates here. Buddy Romer has basically moved to Manchester. Gary Johnson, from the former New Mexico governor, has spent a ton of time here. I can think of Joe Lieberman back when he ran for president.
He rented an apartment
basically
in Manchester.
Moved. So there's a sort of mythology that, well, if you just put in the time on the ground, you will rise in the polls. And I think, as Kathy was kind of suggesting, you know, the candidates in themselves are a constraint on that particular type of retail politicking. You know, some candidates have it, some candidates don't. I think the combination of an electable, viable candidate with a really good ground game, that's when you're really talking about a formidable candidate. But there are lots of candidates who spend a ton of time and they just don't have it. And it's just clear and they don't catch on in the polls.
Well, let's invite our listeners to join us again. The number 1-800-892-6477. Again, if you're going to vote in the GOP primary, how do you feel about this campaign and how it's evolved? Have your own preferences switched as the months have gone by? Have you been following the race in Iowa and how the candidates are doing there, presenting themselves there, perhaps differently than what they do or say in the Granite State? Our number 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange at nhpr.org. One more time, the number 1-800-892-6477. All of you, here's an email from John in Hancock, who says, the Iowa Republican caucuses are so warped, it's amazing that the party continues to play the Iowa game. Republican caucus voters comprise the most extreme faction of the GOP, which results in candidates frothing at the podium with strident messages laden with anti-gay, pro-assault rifle, Bible-thumping, anti-abortion, pro-Israel, anti-Muslim, anti-government rhetoric. He says the rest of the country can only watch in disgust. John says, as a liberal voter, I enjoy watching the show, but I can't help but think that GOP leaders do not like what the Iowa caucuses do to their party. He says they have the power to ignore Iowa, so why do they allow it? Now, Dean, I've got to let our Iowa guests go first on this. Jonathan, all to you. What do you think?
I think that's a question you have to ask the GOP because clearly that's from a liberal point of view, and that's fine. He's certainly entitled to that opinion. But, you know, I think it's important to remember that the caucuses and primaries are a function of the parties. And if, you know, there's been no shortage of people who want to leapfrog Iowa and be first. And I don't think Iowa has the clout to stop that if the national GOP really made that a concerted effort. So I think it's a viable question, but I don't think it's a question for any of us necessarily to do anything other than speculate on, because if the parties decided that Iowa or New Hampshire weren't important, I don't think we'd be first.
What do you think, Kathy? And then Dean, to you too.
First of all, I think that everyone in the country likes to play up the religious conservative aspect of the Iowa caucuses because it somehow makes it easier to try to marginalize the state and what we do here. The fact is that Iowa caucus goers in poll after poll after poll say that the very most important issues to them are jobs, the economy, the federal budget, federal debt. You know, how is that a strange and outlying, marginal opinion? Yes, religious conservatives do want their candidates to check boxes, that they are with them on those conservative issues. But I don't think that those are the issues that necessarily absolutely drive them to the polls. So the fact that they're talking about it in Iowa a lot of times is a function of the fact that they get asked here by Fox debate moderators, et cetera. And you have some organized groups of social conservatives who, want to make sure that their issues are represented. I don't think it's necessarily a dominant thing here, though, when you compare it to the difficult issues that the country's facing as far as economically.
Dean, real quick, yeah, and then to our colleagues.
Right. This is the age-old split between establishment Republicans and movement conservatives and choosing between electability, viability, and ideological purity. I think it plays out in every cycle. I think ever since the 2010 midterm with the Tea Party, the establishment's kind of been on the defensive a little bit. I've talked to a number of conservatives who say that they compromised with McCain last time because they thought he was most electable, and it didn't get them anything, so that this time they were going to be a lot more focused on ideological purity. And I mean, you look at the field of candidates, and certainly it's tilted that way a little bit. And I think that played into my earlier comments about, you look at Rick Perry and the differences in how he campaigned here, and now he's running this ad in Iowa about gays in the military and school prayer and Christmas and not being embarrassed to be a Christian. He would never run that ad in New Hampshire. It just would not resonate. They chose to run that in Iowa as a means of pivoting into that state. So, I understand the larger point than Jonathan and Kathy are making about other issues driving Iowa voters, and this is not an indictment of them, but there just are clear differences in the political cultures.
Let's take some calls. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. John's calling in from Guilford. Hi, John. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling in reference to, just was stated, Rick Perry and his ad, YouTube ad, talking about gays in the military and how disturbed he is that they can serve and yet children can't celebrate Christmas in schools. He's assuming that we're a Christian nation and there's no other religion in our country. And there's nothing wrong with Christianity. I'm a Christian myself. But there is the stance that our forefathers had very strongly, which was the separation of church and state. And what we have is a number of candidates that wanted to put their religion in foremost and strongly as part of their campaign, and I think that's very dangerous.
Okay, John, thanks for calling in. Kathy, we've talked a lot about this ad, but it sure has generated a lot of buzz. What do you think?
Well, I mean, Rick Perry gets backlash from this ad. He actually was in Ames this week and had people shouting at him, why do you hate gays, et cetera. So it's been an ad that he's certainly got a lot of attention and feedback on in Iowa. But really, he has not succeeded in capturing the establishment vote. He came into Iowa trying to run as a jobs candidate, but he really didn't do very well at capturing that sort of mainstream country club Republican vote, which is still looking at Mitt Romney. So he has to do what he can to try to find a constituency among the religious conservatives. That is a crowded field already. He's not really gaining a lot of traction there either. And so, I don't know that this it probably was an act of a little bit of desperation on his part. But I don't see that it's really doing much for him.
Well, and Jonathan, the broader issue of advertising, usually around this time we see a floods of TV ads as voting day gets closer. How thick are the airwaves with ads these days in your state, Jonathan?
They're starting to get more present, but there was certainly a dearth of it leading up to just a few weeks ago and is still a lot less than it had been in the past. Rick Perry probably still doing the most of the ads in the state. But, yeah, there's been a lot less of that. And I think it's consistent with just this whole notion that this caucus is a lot different in Iowa. There's a lot less going on. And it'll be interesting to see how that manifests itself in the results.
And getting back to your earlier point, how it feels different, Jonathan. Dean, it seems to me it's been pretty thin here in New Hampshire, too.
Similar here. You get an occasional ad from Ron Paul, an occasional ad from Mitt Romney and Huntsman. You know, when Perry first thought he was going to play in the state, he did some advertising. Well, he's got a lot of money. You know, it gets to the larger issue of a number of these candidates have been able to use the constant media visibility through the debates and through cable news and the internet to really take the place of grassroots fundraising at this point. You know, and down to the wire, that may hurt them in their ability to run ads. But I think there's been a trade-off that a number of these candidates who normally would not raise the kind of big money that you need to run ads are instead kind of benefiting by the high visibility on television. And there's just been less pressure for the front runners to do that as well.
Let's take another call. Again, the number here on the exchange for you to join us with your questions, comments, thoughts on how the Republican presidential nomination race is playing out in Iowa and in New Hampshire is 1-800-892-6477. Joining us from New Boston is Susan. Hi, Susan. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. My question is about John Huntsman. Here's a man with lots of foreign policy experience, a man who doesn't seem to flip-flop on the issues, but he's not resonating. And yet we have somebody like Romney who put in a health care system, which nobody in Massachusetts liked. He seems to not stay with the issue of the day, rather flip-flops back and forth. And I'm wondering, why is that somebody like John Huntsman is not doing better?
Well, and Kathy, I think to you, how is John Huntsman playing in Iowa?
He's not playing at all, and frankly, that's a self-inflicted wound because he made a determination, and a very public determination early on, that he was not going to campaign in Iowa, not going to come and make any effort here at all. And so I think Iowa voters who might have otherwise given him a look, I mean, let's face it, just about everybody else has had an opportunity to make their case. They decided to write him off. It's one thing to say you want to win the Iowa caucuses and then not spend a lot of time here like Mitt Romney has done. It's another thing where you're a candidate that people here absolutely don't know. I mean, Mitt Romney spent a lot of time in Iowa 4 years ago. The voters here do know him. But John Huntsman is an unknown quantity to Iowans, and he has not come here.
Jonathan Ault?
Well, I agree. John Huntsman, Buddy Romer, Gary Johnson, whether or not any of those three gentlemen would be a viable candidate for president or not, the people of Iowa simply don't know because all three of them have chosen not to come here. And that you can't appeal to people when you take no initiative to reach out and talk to them.
Well, and real quickly, Dean, in New Hampshire, John Huntsman's been doing a little bit better.
Doing a little bit better. He's set up shop here. He came into the state polling low single digits. Now, depending on the poll, he's either in third or fourth place, roughly polling at about 10-13%. You know, the issue with Huntsman is he looks really good on paper, but the sense in New Hampshire all along was that if he's going to come into the state, you know, the place where he's going to have to get the votes would be from people who are moderates or establishment Republicans who are unhappy with Romney because he's not going to get a lot of votes from the Tea Party crowd. And I think he's had difficulty picking off votes from Romney, and we see that in the polling.
All right. Well, Susan, thanks a lot for that call. We'll take more of your calls after a short break at 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org.
We at NHPR would like to thank you, our listeners.
Thank you.
Thanks for supporting NHPR.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks for taking the time to support NHPR this holiday season.
For your financial support during our winter fun drive.
Thank you to everybody for your support.
And most of all, for listening.
Thanks so much for listening and supporting NHPR.
Thanks a whole lot.
Thank you so much for all of your support.
We're here for and because of you.
Have a happy holidays.
May you have a joyous
You're
season.
You're magical and we love
happy
you.
Happy holidays and thank you again.
Happy holidays.
And have a happy holidays this season.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. And the Neve Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
The This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, new numbers showing the Granite State is near the top in terms of painkiller abuse. We'll find out more and how some say we need to address this problem. Email us your comments, experiences, or questions about this issue before the show to exchange@nhpr.org, and then join us Monday morning, live at 9. Today, we're looking at the presidential campaign in Iowa with just 18 days before the Iowa caucuses. Join us with your questions and comments right now at 1-800-892-6477. If you've been tracking this Iowa race and how it's the same and different from what we've seen here in the Granite State. Also, if you're going to vote in the GOP primary here, talk about how your preferences have perhaps evolved over the months of the campaign, or if you've stayed pretty much with the same candidate as the campaign has gone up and down. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Jonathan All and Kathy Obradovich and Dean Spiliotis, here's an email from Ray in Silver Lake. He says, I like hearing about the issues as opposed to who is winning and what gaffes are made in debates. Ray says, I have listened to Buddy Romer, and I was impressed that as a banker, he did not foreclose on anyone and rewrote all mortgages for small businesses and individuals. Also, he brings up the issue of how big donors influence the whole process. I worry that he and his ideas have been excluded from the discussion. Dean, here I'll turn to you first, because Buddy Romer has spent a fair bit of time in New Hampshire. He joined us on The Exchange a couple months ago.
Right, and Buddy Romer used to be a former Democratic congressman from Louisiana, switched parties to become a Republican, was a Republican governor of Louisiana as well. If you talk to him, he really kind of comes across as sort of an old school kind of conservative Democrat, moderate Republican. I think that's been a little problematic for him in the current Republican environment. He set up shop in Manchester. He basically has turned the Barnes & Nobles down by the mall into his office. He's there often working on speeches and campaign strategy. He's in a difficult position. He just has not been able to, for whatever reason, he has not, as is true for Gary Johnson, they have not been able to get any visibility in the debates because they're not polling high enough. And just someone who has a lot to say. He's got a very successful story as a community banker in recent years, has been tremendously successful down there, but just has not been able to kind of get the visibility that you need to break in. And if this is going to be a primary run on television through debates, and they use thresholds to keep people out of the debates, you're basically out of luck. And as I talked to Gary Johnson as well, and he's quite angry about feeling that he's been shut out of the process. So this is a very sort of interesting kind of side narrative. And they've talked a little bit about running about independence, but I don't really see that happening for them either.
Well, and Jonathan All, yeah, I'd love your thoughts on that. Yeah, Go ahead.
Buddy Romer, we invited Governor Romer to be on our air, and he declined. And then I was on a talk show, and one of Buddy Romer's supporters emailed in and complained that he was being ignored. I brought up that point. The supporter went back to the Romer campaign. The Romer campaign contacted me, furious, saying we didn't have any invitation. I forwarded them back the email that they sent us declining their first invitation, and then I haven't heard from them again. So, if anybody's, again, John Huntsman, Buddy Romer, Gary Johnson, if any of those if supporters of any of those people are wondering why their candidates are being excluded, we can talk about the criteria to be in the national debates. But all three of them have had opportunities to talk to voters in Iowa, to talk to the media in Iowa, and all three of them have declined it. So I have little patience for people who say that the media is somehow conspiring against those three candidates when, in fact, a number of us have put out an invitation and they've chosen not to accept it.
Well, and it also shows, I think, Jonathan, the strategies of these candidates. I mean, we've had no problem getting Buddy Romer here in The Exchange, but other candidates who are more interested in Iowa have shown no interest in being here with us in New Hampshire. So we've sort of had the mirror image of your problem.
Exactly. And I think that Kathy said it best when she said there are self-inflicted wounds. And I think that it's a gamble, and sometimes it may pay off for a candidate and sometimes it might not. But people who believe that those candidates have the good ideas, they might need to be asking about their strategy and why they're not getting out there.
Well, and just for the record, yeah, Kathy, I just wanted to ask you one question, but just for the record here in The Exchange, we have had Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, Buddy Romer, former congressman and former governor of Louisiana, also John Huntsman and Ron Paul. So those are the folks that we've had in studio so far.
I think Jonathan's point is well taken. The complaints that I've heard from them have been about access to the debates and about
national
spotlight, yes.
Kathy, I know you want to jump in. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to add that a lot of times these candidates make calculations about whether they can compete in Iowa based on faulty assumptions. 4 years ago, we had Rudy Giuliani saying he couldn't compete in Iowa because of his position on ethanol. This cycle, you had John Huntsman saying the same thing, and yet ethanol, by far, not the same issue that it was 4 years ago. Betty Romer told me he didn't think he would do well in Iowa because of his moderate positions on gay marriage, and civil rights for gays, and civil unions. He may actually have been right about that, but he was making the assumption before he even decided to try. So,
well, yeah, that's a good point, Kathy. So before you write off a whole state, you know, show up once in a while and see what happens.
Now, Gary Johnson has been here, and he has made some efforts to reach out to Iowa voters. But I think his problem is that he's just not different enough from Ron Paul, and Ron Paul is a lot more organized, has a lot more opportunities to reach out to voters, and has a lot more ability to raise money. And so he's dominating here.
Well, and I neglected to mention one other campaign who's been with us, Fred Karger, who's been trying to make a name as the first gay Republican to run for president. He's been with us, too. So our number, again, is 1-800-892-6477. Ray, thanks for that email. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You know, before we go any further, I'd love to just outline for people a little bit, and this is for you Iowa folks again, the differences, demands, peculiarities of a caucus, and how candidates have to adapt their strategies to that. And Jonathan, I'll go to you first. A caucus is not a primary where you just, you know, sometime in between work and home and lunch hour, you go vote.
Yeah, you have to attend the caucus location at a specific time. And you have to be registered with your party. Now, granted, you can change that the day or two before and change it the day or two after. But there is a lot higher level of commitment to do that. And then even the differences between the Democrat and Republican caucuses, now that's not an issue this time, but, you know, there are significant differences in the process there as well. So, the Republican, some people kind of call it the Iowa Republican caucus an extension of the straw poll, because there is, you have to show up at a certain time and you cast your ballot, and it's among the most party faithful, and there's a big push to get people there, and the more ground game you have to go pick people up and bring them to their caucus site can have a huge impact on your level of success. So, yeah, it's really gauging the interest of the diehards of the party, which might be a little bit different than a primary where you can swing by the polling place whenever and cast your ballot.
Well, and Kathy, clear this up for us, too, if you could. What happens once everybody's in that room? As I understand, you could go in there as a Ron Paul person and come out a Mitt Romney person, right? You can change your mind once you're there.
People can change their mind, but I have to say that Republican caucuses are very much, they're a lot more like a straw poll, as Jonathan said, where you can go in, cast your ballot, and leave. You don't necessarily have to engage in a lot of the discussion that goes on. The Democrats actually have a viability rule where if your candidate doesn't have enough votes, that you have the opportunity to vote for someone else. And so the horse trading and the shifting around, it happens a lot more at the Democratic caucuses than at the Republican caucuses.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. And Dean, the only peculiarity about our primary, I mean, otherwise it's a basic election, independents can vote and they can make a big difference here in the Granite State.
Yes, we have that category, undeclared voter. It's the largest category of registered voters in the state. I think it's around 43% or so of voters. And it gives you the opportunity to show up on primary day. And for the time you're in the voting booth, be a member of one of the two parties. And then as soon as you come back out, you change your registration back to undeclared. You know, if you're a member of one party and you want to vote in the other party's primary, that you have to actually change, I believe, either 30 or 60 days in advance. But if you're registered as an undeclared, then you can do it same day. And we also have same day registration. So other than that, it basically feels like a standard presidential election.
All right.
Actually, in Iowa, you can show up and register to vote and register as a Republican and participate in the caucuses the same day as well. So you do have independents who come to the caucus. You don't have that many Democrats crossing over, and the Democrats are going to have caucuses in Iowa, even though there's no contested presidential race. They're using it as an organizing opportunity. but you do have an opportunity for people who are not registered Republicans in advance to come and participate.
Okay, and that's interesting. I didn't realize that Democrats were going to have their caucuses too, Kathy.
Yes, yes. And the Obama campaign is really looking at that as an opportunity to organize here.
Let's take another call. This is Mike in Ware. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I have to admit I got plugged back into this political process in July after an extended absence out of the country. And, it just seems like we've had the candidate du jour. Every couple of weeks there's a new candidate to top the list. And I have to ask, does it just seem like they're, the people with good ideas are rising to the top and getting shot down, and we're kind of settling for the Mitt Romney's, the known candidate, so to speak?
Mike, thanks a lot for calling in. It's a great point. Jonathan, candidate du jour. There's been a lot of talk about that. How's that playing in Iowa?
Well, I think it's, yes, it's true that candidates, that there's been more fluctuation in the polls in the Iowa caucus this time around. And I think that a lot of it is because there has been a little less access. There's been more anticipation. And you can go all the way back to when Rick Perry, his polling numbers in Iowa were the best the day before he entered the race, that there was this perception that, oh, wow, this great guy from Texas is going to come. And then he started to introduce himself to the voters, and people started hearing him, and they, okay, he's got some stuff, but, maybe not the others. Same thing with Herman Cain. He was a relatively unknown. Then he kind of popped up, and then things started coming out about him. So I think it's more a product that there was excitement on the possibility of someone that we could get excited about, but then the vetting process is what knocked them back down. I don't necessarily think that it has to do with people with great ideas getting access or not getting access or being received or not being received. I think it had more to do with there being Republicans in Iowa thinking that there was still a great opportunity out there and that was exciting. I think it's also just worth mentioning that the draft Chris Christie process went on well beyond his numerous denials that he was going to run for president. There were private planes of influential Republicans that flew out to New Jersey to talk to the guy.
Really? From Iowa?
Yes. So I think that shows that for a lot of this process, where there was up and down, there was still this idea that there was this great candidate that was just on the horizon, and that's what led to some of the people popping up and falling back down.
Well, and Kathy, I'm sure you've covered lots of campaigns. So in some sense, yes, there's been a lot of talk about that candidate du jour that our caller mentions. But in some sense, Kathy, this is what happens in crowded campaigns, right? This is a crowded primary, and this is what goes on.
Yeah, it is, although you have to understand that this is a little bit of a different year for the Republican Party. Normally, they anoint the guy who lost the last election, right? It's a very much, a hierarchical where it's the guy who's earned it, who is the front runner. And Mitt Romney is generally that guy, but you've had a lot of people who are not looking for politics as usual. They're looking for change. They're also operating off an assumption that the incumbent, President Obama, is a lot more vulnerable, and so they can be more choosy, perhaps, about who their nominee is. And so you've got all of these things at work. And then you add that to the fact that really all of these polls are being driven by something other than actual votes of people. It's being driven by the media coverage. It's being driven by the debates. You got a situation where somebody pops into attention, and then you get all of the media scrutiny as well as the negative attacks from other candidates, and it brings them down. And so once you start having actual votes from people as the caucus and primary cycle gets started, you do end up with votes that are based on something a little bit more solid than just sort of mercurial polls and media.
Well, Mike, thanks for the call. What do you think, Dean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that both Jonathan and Kathy touched on a number of issues there. Clearly part of this is driven by and the conventional wisdom is that it's driven by a dissatisfaction with Mitt Romney as kind of the Republican heir apparent. I think that's part of it. I think part of it also is that this campaign is less tethered to the grassroots than other campaigns have been, so you get a little more volatility. And then finally, I think Kathy mentioned this idea of an artificial media narrative that kind of gives an ebb and flow to the storytelling on television, which kind of drives people's expectations and their disappointments. So I think it's a combination of all three, but it certainly is a little bit different than we've typically seen.
Well, and Jonathan, to you, I think Iowa has been described as make or break for a couple candidates. Who are they?
Well, I think Michelle Bachmann, clearly, if she doesn't place well enough, her campaign is in some trouble. The only thing that she's got to look forward to if she doesn't do well in Iowa is South Carolina. If she does not get momentum by South Carolina, it's definitely over, and a devastatingly low finish in Iowa could end that sooner. I think Rick Santorum is in a similar boat, that he needs a huge win or at least to exceed a lot of expectations in Iowa. Rick Perry, a little less so. I think he's better funded. I think he's got a better organization, and he can hang around longer. So I'd say that the make or break, how long are they going to be in this campaign? I would project Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum are the ones that need to have a good Iowa finish to be viable in the next few primaries.
And Dean, we used to talk about the Iowa bounce for candidates who did well there coming into New Hampshire. But given some of the differences that we've talked about this hour, is there still an Iowa bounce?
I think it depends. I think there are situations where you do see a bounce. I think in general, though, kind of the fate of the primary and the caucuses have separated a little bit. You think about, you know, Mike Huckabee coming out of Iowa didn't help him in New Hampshire. George W. Bush coming out of Iowa didn't help him in New Hampshire. I think, you know, people, in addition to seeing what happens with Santorum and Bachmann, which I think is accurate. People are also going to be looking to see how Mitt Romney does. Does he finish below third place? Ron Paul, right? Ron Paul, you know, I think the consensus is he's not likely to be the nominee, but he could be a real player if he were to win or come in close second in Iowa and then do well in New Hampshire. And then finally, Newt Gingrich, getting a sense of kind of what sort of traction and staying power his candidacy has. So it's going to be an exciting finish, I think.
All right. Well, we will be definitely following up the day after the Iowa caucuses. And Jonathan Aull, thank you very much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Jonathan Aull, news director at Iowa Public Radio. He joined us from Ames. Kathy Obradovich, thank you also for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
Kathy Obradovich, she's a political columnist at the Des Moines Register. And Dean Spiliotis, thanks a lot for coming in.
Sure. Thanks, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Ryan Lassard and Karen Gohl. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.